It's time for Twig This Week in Google. I'm so happy Gina Trapani's back. That means the Google changelog is back. It also means there's some Google products that are going away. Details next on This Week in Google.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 231, recorded January 8th, 2014. My Tonka Book. This Week in Google is brought to you by Jira, an Atlassian product. Jira is the project management solution for teams planning, building, and launching great products. To learn more about Jira, try it free for 30 days. Visit Atlassian.com/twig. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google. And yes, she's back. I saw her last night in All About Android. She's looking good. She's now in Brooklyn. She's freezing her ass off. It's Gina Trapani, ladies and gentlemen.
I am so happy to be back.
Do I sense a little hat hair there, Gina?
Just a little. Hat hair, Rudolph nose, wearing a winter scarf indoors, even when I'm not outside. Yes. It is cold. Did I mention that it's cold here? It's cold.
Yeah.
It was 4 degrees yesterday. And I don't own thermal underwear, folks. So I was like, I was at American Apparel by my office just like buying random legging. Like just please, like layers. I'm wearing as many layers as possible.
You're coming in desperate. I need leggings.
I need leggings. I nearly task rabbited somebody to go to Uniqlo for me to get heat tech.
Wow.
So, yes, it's very cold here, but I'm so happy to be back on the show. I really missed you guys. Oh, I'm so sorry that I missed the New Year's shenanigans, which was amazing. I caught some of it.
Well, here's the good news. We're doing it again. We'll have to wait a year, of course. I'm not doing it again tomorrow. And I want you and Jeff to be here. What we found was the real benefit of doing that New Year's thing, well, besides the fact that we got to talk to people all around the world, and we really, it was a real celebration, was getting to see our hosts in unusual contexts. Uh-huh. And so I think what we're going to do next.
That was fun.
Yeah. So next year, there'll
be. Games were beyond me, though, Leo.
I know.
The Star Trek thing.
We won't make you.
Chad looked in place there. I think I'd be a little out of place.
You have to be a Star Trek fan. I was out of place. That was fun, though. We were commanding a starship in a simulation, and we had all the people to be on the bridge, a navigator, comms officer, tactical officer, captain, everything. It was really fun. That was called the Artemis simulation. He goes around from conference to conference doing those, Wes does. And we'll have that and all of the highlights on our YouTube channel soon. In fact, we're putting hour by hour up right now on youtube.com/InsideTwit. And then on Twit specials, we'll do a series of specials. But what I was saying is the thing that I think is so great, and we will definitely do next year, one is we're going to get every time zone. I got to talk to everybody in every time zone and say, because we had 30 bottles of champagne, and it was so much fun opening one every hour, sometimes every 15 minutes. But then the other is I want to get every host out here, and I want you all to pick something that you love that isn't what you normally talk about. So Steve made coffee. Mary Jo gave us a beer tasting. Alex Lindsay mixed drinks. It was really fun.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Can I talk about MMA?
Yeah. You want to? Is that what you do? We can have a little MMA demonstration. You know what we did have? We had a team of theatrical fighting people show us how to do, lightsaber fighting.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool.
So I put on my hood and,
I think that was the geekiest moment of all. I might have missed a few, but I think
Jeff, it sounds like you watched the show.
I came in on and off throughout the 24 hours. I'd say I'd be bored. You were like my Twitter that day. Nobody's on Twitter. I think, how's Leo making a fool of himself now?
It really did kind of feel like you had friends who were having a party and you could drop in when you wanted. I did kind of the same thing. I was working, but every once in a while I would just kind of stop in and be like, what are these guys doing now? And it would always make me laugh.
Well, now you are going to be the friends who are having the party.
I like it.
Awesome.
We'll fly you out.
Yeah.
Please do. Bring your baby and everything, your wife. Everybody wants to come out. We're going to, this is going to be, I think, a regular feature of the network because it's just so much fun.
You know, where else I want to be at that time of year, next year, is the Chaos Computer Club meeting. I was watching tons of videos, but I think Jacob Applebaum just did a brilliant, brilliant presentation.
Now, is it German? Where is the Chaos Computer Club?
This year was in Hamburg. It's only been in Berlin. At the beginning of the WikiLeaks movie, that's where Assange is presenting WikiLeaks at first. It's the Mondo gathering of good hackers. And they had Glenn Greenwald give a keynote.
Gosh, it would have been nice if Snowden could have snuck in for that.
It would have been phenomenal. Phenomenal. Yeah. Well, one of the great pictures was at the airport for Hamburg. A lot of people took this picture of a guy standing there as if a chauffeur with a sign that just said Snowden.
Just in case.
That's just great.
In case he came. His ride is waiting.
I really recommend Jacob Applebaum's video. Look it up, folks. It's
And is that a New Year thing they do every New Year?
They do it between. So
okay, so you could go to that and then come out here.
Fly to Hamburg, yes.
I kind of like the idea of having you be here. Was he talking about NSA this time?
Yeah, he was talking about the stuff that Der Spiegel revealed, I guess, that week and a half ago.
Oh,
And he kept on saying it's going to blow your mind. Your mind's not blown yet. And he got to the end of the presentation. Who here still hasn't had their mind blown? He said, "You cynics, just wait. Now I'm going to do it." And then one guy raised his hand. His mind still wasn't blown. It was what they can do to us. It was pretty amazing.
Well, and the ant materials, which we've talked about extensively, Security Now. In fact, all of Security Now next week will be on the ant materials.
I miss not having Steve on before the show. I always get to learn a little bit. Right,
I know. You're going to have to tune in. It's on Tuesdays now, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. Good, I will watch this.
It
was called To Protect and Infect, the Militarization of the Internet. Oy.
So there's good stuff that happens that time of year, you know?
You're saying that. Well, it's slow. It's a slow time as everybody gets ready for CES, which is going on right now. Right. And it tends to be a little slow in tech news. The NSA really kept us lit up. And this, I credit Steve, Edward Snowden and Glenn Greenwald for this, because their strategy was to dole out bit by bit this information.
But now they get accused of doing that cynically, and it's important to say, I think it's really, really important to say, I don't think that's fully the strategy. It's also that each of these revelations takes a lot of reporting. And I hear this from my Guardian friends. You really got to dig in, figure out what the, what does this acronym mean? What is this really, what are the implications of this and that? Talk to people. There's a huge amount of work that goes into each one of these stories. So I think that's part of the reason it takes time. And so when they get accused of doling it out, or he gets accused of hoarding it until he gets under Pierre Omidyar's wing, is that true or not? I don't know. But if they did it at the fastest pace possible, I don't think it'd be a lot much faster than what they've been doing.
I think it's easy. You could interpret it either way. It's easy to say, it's cynical. They want to maximize the monetary value. But by now, there should be no question in anybody's mind that whether they're doing that or not, that by slowly dribbling it out gives it its appropriate amount of attention. Had they dumped this all as WikiLeaks style, dumped this all, it would not have gotten the attention it deserves.
You're right.
Just this catalog of exploits from LeakSource, the ant exploits, and admittedly, these are old. These are a few years old. The iPhone exploit, for instance, is from 2008 for the second iPhone. So we presume that there's much better effective stuff going on right now. Shows how they can target an attack against pretty much anybody. Now, Bruce Schneier does make that point on these, that this is privacy invasion retail style, not wholesale style. Unlike gathering all the phone records, this is how you can take someone's iPhone and spy on what they're doing. Not everybody's, just somebody's. How you can embed something in a computer so they can't get rid of it. You know, things like that.
And let's say that if you look at the principles that were put out by Google and the other seven companies, I think we're all fine with specific surveillance of people who are properly suspected under due process and with due cause. So some of this technology, you know, I guess isn't bad, but do we have any faith that they use it only for that purpose when we have secret FISA courts?
I don't know. There's no oversight.
And look at the great revelation coming this week of the revealed who the burglars were who went after the FBI and showed how J. Edgar Hoover was using the technology he had at the time to try to do in the left wing. It's been done before.
Yeah. I mean, I don't. We've certainly talked about this ad nauseum.
Yes.
So
I guess it's my fault we started again.
No. Look, there's no more important story of 2014. It should have been Time's Person of the Year and everything else. But
yes.
I don't know if there's much news we can add.
Nope, I think that's kind of
except to say that if you want to know what these exploits are, Bruce Schneier is going one by one, a blog post a day through them on his blog, Schneier.com. And Steve Gibson's going to do his analysis of the Ant and Dow technologies next week on Security
good.
Now. Yeah, I think it'll
be good. And Security Now is now on when, Leo?
Tuesdays, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time on twit.tv. You can watch live, but you can always get anything after the fact. You can watch last Tuesday's show if you want, twit.tv/SN. We talk a little bit more about this. It is kind of shocking and depressing a little bit.
It is. So did you have any temptation at all to go to CES this year?
I always am tempted. It's a mixed feeling. How about you?
No, I haven't been in 2 decades, probably.
Gina, did you want to? I bet you wanted to go.
Nope. Never been. Don't want to go. It's just not my thing.
You could tell from a distance it's too much.
I can tell from a distance it's just not my thing. Well, I've never been much of a hardware. I always sort of, I'm biased towards software. And I'm also just an introvert, so it sounds like hell to me.
It is a lot of noise, a lot of commotion, a lot of fuss. Everything's twice as hard as it ought to be, from getting a sandwich to getting a cab.
Yeah, it sounds like Comic-Con, except without the cool costumes.
Times a thousand.
Yeah, times a thousand.
And
exactly.
Yet, there's certainly stuff to see. Some of it fascinating, like Michael Bay's meltdown at the Samsung event. Some of it silly, like the idea of mixing Android and Windows 8.1 in a computer.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of that? That's an Asus transformer.
Yeah, we covered that last night on Android, on All About Android, and I was saying after the show to my friends, like, I forgot what a crazy time the Android ecosystem. The notebook laptop that a hot dual boots Android and Windows, that was up against the phone that docks into the tablet, which I know isn't a new thing, as like the two crazy, why would I ever want this sort of gadgets for me. But it does kind of feel like, oh, let's just throw something up against the wall and see what sticks. You know, throw everything up against the wall and see what sticks.
It does not seem like there's demand. I don't understand what the use case is. Unless there's like a game or some app that you use in Android.
Well, I don't understand the use case for Windows, period.
Well, I mean, that's the other
You would go all the other way.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't used Windows in forever, so I realize that my Mac bias kind of makes me scoff. You know, but it's for people, Leo, who can't decide between an Android laptop or a Windows tablet. You can get both.
I can't decide.
I sometimes I want an Android laptop and sometimes I want a Windows tablet. Vice versa.
Transformer,
I mean,
book duet.
Market.
Yeah. By the way, it's Android 4.1 is Jelly Bean. Kind of a little behind. We're up to 4.4 now. It's not the first we've seen. Other companies have done this even last year. And I thought Asus did this last year, but you know, there you go. It's there if you want it.
You're right about the timing here. I wish I could figure out the year, but I realized that I now use no Microsoft products at all. It's the first time since probably 1982, something like that.
Yeah.
I guess I was on CPM in 81. I was on MS-DOS. When did the PCs come out? The IBM PCs.
1981.
So it's probably about 82 that I got that. And so from 82 until 2013, I used Microsoft products. And now I don't use any Microsoft product.
Yeah.
No offense to Microsoft. It's not because I'm trying to. It's not because I think they're bad or anything like that. It's just because I just don't need them now. I got the cloud.
The other point to be made about CES is that I think if you're a company that really has something to say, doing it at CES is really a crapshoot. you might get more attention because there sure is a lot of press there, but you might not. You might get buried in the sea of information and not get the attention you want.
I think it worked well for Marissa?
So Marissa Meyer gave the keynote. I think she got attention. I think that's if you can do a keynote at CES, that's going to guarantee you a certain amount of attention. There's only a handful of those.
And I mean, she's running a huge company and gets a lot of attention just because that company, you know, she's turning that company around.
And it's the first time they've done a keynote there, right? Yahoo's done a keynote, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe Terry Semel did one. I don't remember. It doesn't seem like right.
It seems like the equivalent of a consumer app announcing at South by Southwest, which is something
exactly.
I'd never do.
Yes. There's some benefit. Mm-hmm. Well, I note, for instance, that Motorola has announced it's doing an event in London January 14th. Now, if this were a big, important announcement, they could have done it a week earlier at CES. Right. By the way, according to Droid Life, the thinking is this will be good news for you in England. Moto X and Moto Maker, perhaps. Motorola told Droid Life at CES, we have a bit of an announcement. It's very British. And we have ambitions to broaden our geographic footprint. There is a job listing on the Motorola UK site suggesting that Moto Maker might be coming along. Program manager Moto Maker. It's in the UK. Right now, Moto Maker, which is the way to build those Motorolas in the US, right, is only in the US. Responsible for national and international integration of Moto Maker point of sale and online registration. So when Moto X came out, Motorola said, sorry, North America, South America only. I think we're now going to see the expansion. And I think there are, you know, a lot of people go, oh, ho-hum. But I think this is still my phone of choice. I think this is a great phone and a really good introduction to Android for people coming from the iPhone side. So Marissa Mayer brought Katie Couric on stage.
Who I had coffee with just 2 nights ago.
Oh.
Oh, fancy, huh?
Oh.
Ah, you fancy. Okay.
John Legend, cast member. Did you have coffee with him too?
No.
Cast members of Saturday Night Live, Tumblr CEO David Karp, and David Pogue, their new tech columnist.
So, star-studded lineup.
I guess we don't want to bury the lead, so tell us about Katie.
Oh, it was not a big deal. I was asked when she announced she was going to Yahoo, I got a call from Weekend Edition NPR, and I, you know, blather about Katie going to Yahoo. The truth is, do I have anything new to say? No, but I decided to use it for my own agenda, which I said, I hope that Katie and Marissa, who are really smart and really good, reinvent TV news because it sucks and it needs it.
Oh, yeah.
And so out of nowhere, I got a tweet from Katie saying, let's have coffee.
Wow.
So we just had a nice coffee talking about that and such and so forth.
Was she pitching you on what they were about to do at Yahoo?
No, not at
or
all.
Was it she wanted to hear what you had to say?
I think she's in listening tour mode, I think.
Wow.
And this is the day before she went out to Vegas. But, you know, I've always admired her. I think she's very, very smart. And, you know, she's gone through every network now. She's in something new. And I think she might try to reinvent things in substantial ways and is not going to presume to do it the way that she's done it. She doesn't have the kind of staff that a network had.
Right.
So it was just kind of bantering back and forth about what's possible, but it was very enjoyable.
You should send her you should tweet her the clip from the show where you all talked about this while I was out.
I don't think so.
it was a little critical.
Completely positive.
Self-loathing new media, said Leo Laporte.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the headline.
You came back around saying how you like and admire Katie, but you got to get through.
I think she's great, but I don't think that is internet native by any means. I don't think many of the moves Yahoo's made are internet native moves.
No.
Did
you download their new starter screen thing?
The My Yahoo page?
No, they
Aviate.
Bought an application.
Oh, they bought Aviate.
Aviate.
I didn't like Aviate when it came out. I beta
tried to use it and I wasn't crazy.
Yeah.
About it. I think Aviate versus what's the other one? Cover.
I don't like either of them.
I agree. I installed them both and don't use either of them.
What do you use as a launcher, Gina?
I, I've got the Google experience going on. Yeah. And I don't use a launcher. I just group a couple of apps in a folder on my dock, my most used apps. And I just basically do that. And I've tried a bunch of launchers and, you know, with different methods, swipe in. And I just kind of do it that way. I don't like to keep icons on my home screen. I like to look at the picture of my daughter. And that seems to work. I keep it simple.
Yeah. The idea of Aviate.
It's contextual. So the idea of Aviate is that it organizes your phone for you based on context. So I could tell from the Play Store page instantaneously that it was not for me, because it says straight up, like, if you like to customize your phone yourself, this is not the app for you. So you install Aviate, it takes over your home screen. From what it does is it categorizes your apps for you into groups, and it brings up apps that you'll want based on where you are and what time of day it is. So for example, you go to the gym, it'll bring up the Nike Plus app. If you're at a restaurant, it knows that. It'll make a recommendation of what you should eat based on, I don't know, Foursquare or other apps. If it's nighttime, you're going to bed, it'll bring up the alarm clock app, that kind of thing. So it sounds sort of Google Now-ish, except it takes over your whole home screen and makes assumptions about what you'll need and when you'll need it.
And I always preferred stick shift to automatic.
Well, right.
I like to know what I'm doing.
You also don't want a UI that's changing all the time.
Yeah.
I think that's a mistake.
I agree.
I think it's a good idea. I mean, they're marketing as somebody who just wants to make their phone easy to use and forget it, not customize it themselves. I don't know, but I understand what you're saying. If my phone home screen changes,
depending on where I am,
it could potentially be confusing. Yeah.
It's not the first time. This is a very common area. People say, oh no, you want it to customize yourself. But I don't know. I tried it. It was in beta. It's still in beta. I guess, is Yahoo going to make it public soon?
Well, they've
got 25,000 beta invites that they're giving out.
I'll bet if you go for it right now, you can get on the beta invite still. I'll bet.
Real quick.
You just use Yahoo all caps as the code.
Okay. There you go. This kind of answers, I think, a little bit the question that everybody's had about Meyer and what she's going to do with Yahoo, whether she's going to go in the content direction or the services direction.
Right.
And she's going in both. It's very clear.
Yeah.
Big focus on content, mainstream content, though. Mm-hmm. So I think she's also looking at what happened at YouTube. It's pretty clear at this point that YouTube is a little bit of a failed experiment.
Really?
Yeah.
How so?
Well, here's my thinking. You tell me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
It came to the forefront doing a few things. One, sharing copyrighted content like, you know, NBC Saturday Night Live clips, which NBC hated, and crotch shot and, you know, humorous stuff. It's been a great place for viral videos. The real problem with viral videos is they're pretty much all one shot, one hit wonders. Now on YouTube, then for a while, YouTube recognizing this, see, it's a terrible platform for advertisers because advertisers don't know what they're going to get, basically. Am I going to get a crotch shot? Am I going to get a pirated content? What am I going to be?
Except they've
Well, they responded to that. They responded to that by investing $150 million in channels from people like Shaquille O'Neal, all of which failed. So they've retrenched on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're reaching out to, you know, who's successful on YouTube is in mainstream is Ellen, because Ellen DeGeneres puts clips from her TV show on YouTube and people watch it and they monetize it. But I don't think that from the point of view of Google, this is a brand message that is great for them. So I think that when I say failed, hey, hundreds of millions of people watch videos all the time. I mean, everybody my son's age watches videos all the time. But the problem for Google is, how do you monetize that?
Yeah, I guess that was what I was wondering how you define
it. It's not a failure in the sense that people use it.
It's a cultural force.
It's a huge cultural force.
Yeah, and in that way, it's absolutely been successful.
And there are people, you know, the Jenna Marbles of the world who have, PewDiePie, giant followings. But PewDiePie is a good example. Is he still the number one most followed, most subscribed to channel on YouTube, Chad? I think he is.
Yeah, I think he is.
He's a Swedish guy? Who plays video games and swears a lot while he's doing it. And there's a little picture of him doing it. And Lisa's son, Michael's 11, lives on PewDiePie videos, watches them over and over and over again. How does this help Google in any way? It helps PewDiePie.
Well, I mean, I think people make fun of PewDiePie because he's so make funnable. But
No. I didn't pick him because he's make funnable. I pick him because he's the most followed person on YouTube.
Right.
By a long shot. He has 3 billion video views, 19 million subscribers.
And this is just a dude, huh? That's great.
Well, good for him. Bieber. And it's good for him in the sense that he's got a lot of people watching him play video games. I guess he's making money.
He's got to be. He's definitely a partner, right? I mean,
he's not making as much money as he'd like to be. I mean, he's not a real... I mean, maybe he's making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. It's very possible.
He's probably making, here, that Social Blade, the network that I have...
What do they say?
They'll estimate it, and I bet he's making a million. Yeah, he's making it at least 115,000, at most 1.1 million. That's a monthly earning. Sorry.
Whoa.
Yearly earning is 1 point. And this is based off of the lowest CPM Google and YouTube offers versus the highest CPM they offer. So,
well, if he's making $16 million a year, more power to him. What does Google get out of this?
They get 45%.
Right.
And so they would get a little bit less than that just on one user.
So I just think this is a short-term win, but in the long run... Are those advertisers getting anything? Because Michael watches PewDiePie over and over and over and over again.
Absolutely, they're getting the eyeballs they want, and PewDiePie
they're getting crap eyeballs.
But PewDiePie is a bad example because there's many.
What's a good example?
Well, let's say Lamar Wilson. He's created an audience that comes to him every day.
Is he making a lot of money?
I mean, he's making enough.
Is he making
money,
a living?
But there's also 3,000 people that are like him and. Google and YouTube is making 45% of whatever they do. I mean, you can do things like the Fine Brothers who make kids react videos, and that's a television, basically a television show that people are subscribing to, and that's where I see the future of that type of entertainment is that there is meat there.
And chat, it's about Google's always about scale. The weird thing about Google to me is if they would reduce that percentage down to 25%. They would multiply the size of the talent pool and what goes on there, and they would end up netting more in the end. They're being a little greedy. The network economics are take out as little as you can to make it grow as big as possible.
Well, and we have somebody in the chat room, Sam Harrelson, says he runs an ad agency. He says, I assure you, advertisers are getting lots from YouTube if you do a tad bit of work to keep things relevant.
Which is a key point. They often don't, but I think Sam's
quite
right.
Well, I got to tell you, advertisers don't get a lot from NFL football. I mean, it's very easy to buy an ad, to spend millions on an ad that doesn't change anything around you. It feels like, okay, it could be that really I come from an out-of-touch era in terms of content.
I would say this is as digital native as you can get.
I agree. That's for sure.
Like, here's someone you've never heard of. His name is Ant Venom. He makes Minecraft videos.
Yeah.
2 million people subscribe to him, and most of his videos have over, you know.
YouTube's numbers to me.
Still, I don't think they may be a little bit squishy, the numbers, in that if you click on it and then leave within, 5 minutes.
I think YouTube's numbers are way overinflated.
They may be overinflated.
I think YouTube's benefit to an advertiser is questionable. I just wonder if it really could survive long term.
You built a business on.
Well, we
web
do something
video
really different. No. I'm not saying web video is bad. I'm not saying that.
You're saying the content on YouTube is.
I
what's
feel
bad.
Like content. The YouTube model is not a failed model. But obviously the evidence is against that. So.
So it's like Medium versus Blogger, that kind of thing.
Yeah, like the it's very much like content. That. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so Twit.
Well, who's the winner there? Who's the winner in that comparison?
Well, the idea that Medium has high quality content, that it looks beautiful and attracts a high quality audience, however you want to define that, and Blogger is just like a bunch of junk that people started FTPing up to the web, in 1990.
At zero cost to Google at huge volume and in pockets high engagement.
Is Google happy with YouTube?
They say they are, but what else are they going to say?
Right. But I mean, I wonder, do you think they are?
I think they're trying to still figure it out. I think that looking at what they've spent money on and what they're focusing on, they definitely feel like they're not there yet and that they do need to shift things going forward. But I think that may be easier than all of us expect, because the gaming community on YouTube exploded out of nowhere because of a few changes that they did to the algorithm.
I would guess that that's really for YouTube, for Google, a lot of what YouTube represents is more way to see how stuff works than it is something. Well, I mean, I guess they make money on it, right? So who am I to say?
I mean, I remember a couple years ago being at, pardon me for this, Davos with Chad, then Hurley, and Marissa and Eric saying, you know, we're pleased with the direction. It had just started making money.
Right.
And don't forget, it was in great measure a defensive move to buy Yahoo, so nobody else got it. They became kings of video in that sense. No, are they kings like Hulu? No, but Hulu's, you know, I would argue that Hulu's more of a failure than...
Oh, I think they're struggling a lot more. It's apparent they are. Their parent company keeps trying to sell it or figure out what to do with it. Ironically, Hulu looks a lot more like traditional media. YouTube, to a traditional media guy like me, looks like chaos.
So is the web.
Right.
So is the web.
If
you're going to look for a new model, you have to look at Netflix, I think. The beginnings of it at Netflix. Tim Wu had an amazing story in The New Republic about how Netflix is reinventing the world as we know it. And it's something I'm dear to my heart talking about, is the notion of the value of signals.
Right.
And that's what Netflix is beginning to do. And that's what Google understands better than anybody.
YouTube is all about signals for sure.
Exactly. So I think that if we see Google as a signal monopoly.
Yeah.
And I'm involved in a company.
Yeah, that's
now,
a good point. In the same way Twitter is.
Yes, yes, yes. Each in their own way. Yeah. And so I'm full disclosure here is I'm about to start, I think, advising and maybe even investing in a company called Infinite Analytics that came my way from Sir Tim Berners-Lee that potentially can break the signal monopoly by those of us who don't have it, who aren't in it, media companies, commerce companies, and so on. And if you can start to understand people's signals so you can give them better relevance, get better engagement, get higher value, that's where media, to my mind, goes. It's not about content. It's about signals and relationships with people and the value you can return as a result.
Yeah, except for the person who consumes the media doesn't think it's about signals. It's about content for viewers.
They do when it's about relevance. They do when it's about relevance. When I go ask Google for pizza, if the old days of Yahoo, you ask about pizza, you're going to get a treatise on pizza. You ask Google for pizza.
And so here's where you can get some.
Yeah, and what you're going to get with jelly, I don't know yet.
All right, I'm wrong. I stand corrected.
No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
The reason this came up is because it struck me that what Marissa Mayer was trying to do at Yahoo was the anti-YouTube, which was a highly curated, safer place for advertisers to spend their money.
That has always been Yahoo's.
With known brands and known content. Yeah.
With volume.
And known names.
And known names. And not at all digital native.
No.
Except the Tumblr acquisition.
Tumblr is, yeah. Tumblr is.
But even Tumblr, doesn't Tumblr, to some extent, Gina, match your Matter versus Blogger comparison? The Tumblr is more about trying to curate quality, or is that ridiculous as I don't use it much?
I don't know where Tumblr lands on the quality spectrum, probably somewhere in the middle. But Tumblr does seem to be more about curating and reblogging, right, than anything else. But Tumblr has a nice aesthetic. It has a very creative community. And I'm making broad generalizations here. There are lots of different kinds of Tumblrs.
Do you think Yahoo sees Tumblr as just an ad platform with millions of eyeballs they can play ads to, or something larger?
I don't know. I mean, I like to think that Tumblr is somewhere in the Flickr bucket of like, you know,
that could be a bad
creatives.
Place to be in the Flickr bucket. It's not been a good bucket to be in for a while.
look, Flickr is getting incrementally a little better. It has had some changes since Meyer took the helm. The mobile app's got a refresh. The photo layouts are getting better. Look, it's not Google Plus does a lot better work with photos at this point. I look forward to Auto really, Awesome videos yeah. a lot more than Me Flickr too. Notifications, and I use both extensively. But you know, Flickr hasn't gone away. I still have a real soft spot for Flickr. I use it for my kids' photos. And so I don't know. I like to think that Tumblr's in the Flickr bucket. And I also like to think that Meyer is going to continue to refine those tools and focus on them and make them kind of capture that audience of those are kind of creative digital natives with a certain kind of aesthetic. I think that those are good monetizable. That's a good monetizable audience as well. But then there's also the weather app and the news, you know, the news app that they're launching. So and you know things like Aviate. So it's interesting to see what they're doing. I mean, she's obviously trying to get tools out there that have the Yahoo name kind of relevant again on our devices, on our home screens, You know, I don't know. Maybe she is taking a cue. They are taking a cue from something like YouTube, where they're going more curated, more high quality.
I understand that I wear two different hats in all of this, which one is as a pundit, I'm supposed to have an opinion on everything. And so, you know, that's an opinion. But then as a reporter and a journalist, there is this fascinating thing that I think should continue, which is that people are trying all sorts of stuff. There's more experimentation.
This reporter in you was being skeptical, which is right. You should be.
I'm skeptical of everything.
You're skeptical,
of course.
And that's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm. You know, of course, one of the things I fear as a business owner is Yahoo Tech, because that's the closest thing to what we do here at Twit, although not that close. Yeah, really, I'd be more afraid if I were BuzzFeed than anything else. This is the front page of the new Yahoo Tech launched. Very in a timely fashion during CES. That's the best time. If you're going to get people, get them now. There's an overwhelming amount of news. Very upworthy in some of its headlines. A lot of this gadget can control your iPhone without even touching it. And, you know, this enormous phone battery allegedly lasts more than 2 days. Is this razor the last one you'll ever buy? Very upworthy in its feeling. And its design, you know, I mean, look at that front page with the owl going, ooh, 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 ooh. The sassiest birds on the internet. Ooh, 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 ooh.
So have we officially coined the term upworthy to describe these times? Like, is upworthy type or it's not BuzzFeed?
Same thing.
Upworthy, it's positive content. Positive.
Okay. So listen, this is a typical. Every parent's three biggest Facebook fears and what to do about them.
That's Upworthy you're reading from.
That's Yahoo Tech.
Oh, that's Yahoo. Okay.
Gina, while we were gone, we had the Upworthy story generator.
Yeah.
There's an Upworthy story generator we used while you were gone. And I think BuzzFeed, my one New Year's resolution is not to click on any lists again.
Listicles.
No lists. And but Upworthy or stories that things that tell you how you're going to feel after you click. That's Upworthy.
You won't believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's your morning cry. Yeah.
This isn't quite that bad, but it's clear that their headline writer is there's something going on with this.
Well, stay on this for a second. Because I've been wanting to play with this. I haven't written a post about this yet. But this notion of manipulation that we go from search engine optimization to human brain optimization. And we look at the catalogs of ways we're trying to be manipulated. And so Upworthy is one. This is how you'll feel. BuzzFeed is one. Oh, this what a cute list. You can't avoid clicking on this. And you're going to pass it around. Native advertising is one. We're going to fool you and make you think this is content. It's all a form of manipulation. Now, if you go back to what I said earlier about signals, there's a small bridge between cynicism and reality there where giving me something that's targeted to me so that I will engage with it more because I value it more, I say that's good. Giving me something that cynically says they're going to manipulate me into clicking on something that I'm going to be disappointed in, but they got something out of it, that's bad. The latter is a mass media model. The more we can fool people to click, the better we are. Slideshows,
right.
Drudge, all that stuff, right? The former, I would argue, is a Google model where in the long run, they know that if they're evil and misuse this power they have, they'll lose us.
Yeah, it's a tough, it's a very thin line. I mean, look, every product, I mean, editorial is a type of product, right? So every product, you design it with the idea of like, how are your customers or your users going to feel? We're going through this with ThinkUp right now. I mean, we're agonizing over every word because you want to be evocative, right? You want to create some sort of feeling. Mostly you want to create delight. I mean, Jobs talked about this all the time with the iPod and that kind of thing. But you don't want to be manipulative. You want to be evocative with a purpose, right? So it's like... Mm-hmm. Cotton candy versus broccoli, you know, maybe broccoli with a little butter. You know, it's like, what are you actually giving your consumers?
So the metrics are everything. Because if you measure yourself by gross tonnage, then you're going to do what BuzzFeed does, and you can get a lot of tonnage that way. If you measure yourself by the outcomes in your user's life, did they accomplish what they wanted to accomplish? Are they better off for it? Then you have a valuable product. You may not have the right way to monetize that, yes or no, but you'll have something that somebody values from you. And there's a big difference there, and it's the mass media way of tonnage. I think is still corrupting the net.
Yeah.
Leave it to me to say something to lead to silence. I specialize in that for show.
I'm
translating it into German in my mind.
That's profound. But you know, no, it's true, and it kind of segues a little bit into the Rap Genius. TechCrunch's headline was about growth hacking gone bad.
Yeah, let's take a break and do that. And I do want to get Matt Cutts on to talk about Rap Genius at some point soon because that was his ban. So
he was a little booked today, but yeah, he was almost on.
A little busy. We'll get him next week, maybe.
I listened to all the shows, by the way. I really, while I was gone, it was both luxurious and frustrating to be a listener.
Yeah, you want to get on there and... Say something.
I did, but I was all in the subway listening to, and I really love the episode that Matt was on. I'd love to have him back on, but yeah, it was fun.
Well, and I could just say on the other side, we really missed your input. So
we did, really, truly.
It's not the same without you.
Nice. That was nice. You guys are too nice.
Our show today brought to you by the folks at Atlassian. They make a product called Jira. And I think that name comes from the Japanese name for Godzilla, Gojira. What is Jira? It's the project management solution, one of the world's most powerful and customizable issue and project management systems out there. It captures and organizes your workflow so you can prioritize and take action on what's important while staying up to date with activity going on around you. I think anybody who runs a business, who runs a team, knows that the biggest challenge in all of this is getting all these disparate pieces of information into a single place so that you could plan, so that you can communicate. Jira gives your team a simple, intuitive interface for collaborating with each other in real time. You can integrate all your planning documents from all your sources, your backlog, your issues, your code repository. Yes, it works with all the big ones, including our favorite Git. Set up any business process you can imagine so your team can work the way you want. You can stay in the loop with notifications from email, chat, at replies, RSS, monitor streams of activity. Of course, it's got self-updating reports and dashboards, so you just keep those running and you're always in the know. Just so sweet. Thousands of Jira add-ons are out there from many, many, many millions of Jira users, including test management, time tracking, project management, lots of other uses. 25,000 companies, 70% of the Fortune 100, NASA, they all use Jira. If you're going to Mars, you need Jira. And, of course, you can build onto Jira yourself with the Atlassian REST APIs. Make it very, very simple. Atlassian.com/twig. Find out more about Jira. Monthly plans start as low as $10 a month for up to 10 users. But you, my friend, because you're listening today, can try it free for 30 days. Try it with your team. Let them know, you're doing it. Get their impressions. Find out what they think. It will transform your team and your product. Atlassian Jira. Atlassian.com/twig for more information. And we thank them for their support of this week in Google. I'm not an enterprise guy. I have to get Father Robert to explain all this to me sometime. Although, as we run our business, I start to understand what complexity means. Holy cow. Holy cow. Rap Genius. What is Rap Genius? It was started by some Yale guys. And it was, I think, kind of a, I don't know. Have you ever used it, Gina? It was kind of a comedy site to begin with.
I haven't. I guess I'm not hip
it's
enough.
It's an anecdotal. But... Jake, my son Jake, said to me, he before all this broke, a couple of days before, he said, you know, Pa, you really need to look at, he didn't call me Pa.
Pa. Hey, Pa.
That's what I call my father. You really need to look at this thing because it's a really interesting form. And it was a lyric.
It's kind of a Wikipedia for hip hop.
Annotation.
Yeah.
But then it takes anything else. You can annotate anything else. So some authors are putting up chapters of their books and annotating them, not as footnotes, but as background material and explanation. You can put up a government statement and annotate it. It becomes a very interesting
let me look at this.
Form
so,
for journalism.
Go, 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 go. Go, shorty. It's your birthday. We gonna party like it's your birthday. We gonna sip Bacardi like it's your birthday. And you know we don't give up because it's not your birthday. You can find me in the club, bottle full of bub. Look, mammy, I got the X. If you into taking drugs,
got it for the album.
I'm into having sex.
Shatner has nothing on you.
I ain't into making love. So... come give me a hug if you're into getting rubbed. This guy sounds like a creep.
Whitest people on earth.
So I don't see no annotations. Let's see. This is good. This is good. So I would go here if yes. If I'm listening to a song and I'm trying to understand.
Right.
You know. What this means.
It's a lyric site.
Yeah, but it annotates it.
So than anything else. It's a platform that lets you annotate anything.
She got a thing for that Gucci, that Fendi, that Prada, that BCBG, Burberry, Dolce and Gabbana. And then, okay, the other foolish
like annotations that explain the.
I was hoping that, but it doesn't.
The phrases, it like also, an Urban Dictionary built into.
Well, here's one. I could care less how she perform when she in the bed. Get that rack, catch a date, and come pay the kid. So apparently in this annotation, evidently 50 Cent does not care about customer satisfaction.
So do you remember when Groupon CEO Andrew Mason did his farewell letter?
Yeah.
Yes, well, some people, let's get back to something in our context.
Some people annotated this. So he has each. So, you know, I'm posting it publicly. So because it's going to leak anyway, and you click it, it says this is a wink to, among the others, the pre-IPO you know,
Kara Swisher,
leaked, you know, yeah, thing. And then, you know, after 3.5-4 intense years, and then it provides a whole bunch of stuff about, like, well, they were valued at $16.7 billion when Google tried to buy them for $6 billion.
Actually, but now they're useful. Forget the rap lyrics.
Absolutely. And then it says, you know, he's decided to take off time to spend more time with his family, and it links to Wikipedia articles about the first time that I'm going to go spend time with my family was ever used in a letter, you know, to say that he's stepping down as a company. And any of these yellow things were written by users.
Right.
And any of the green things are links back to other articles or other things like that.
If you go to chat, I just put one up, lyric one up on the rundown in the chat. If you go to The Weeknd, Jake is a huge fan of The Weeknd.
The Weeknd. That's a band or that's a song?
It's a song. A singer. Okay.
Singer. The Weeknd, yes.
So adaptation lyrics. So if you go down and it says, I lay my head on 1,000 beds, you click on that, it just has a picture of him and talking about the tour life, right? So it's you get a sense of the inside of the lyrics.
So there you go. That's Rap Genius, ladies and gentlemen. Couple of Yale boys.
Enabled. So it was a wonderful thing. It's really pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it was growing like crazy. But then.
Yeah.
Are you going to pick up the story now?
Well, they decided they wanted to grow faster. So they did something called SEO, except that there's SEO and there's SEO. And there's black hat SEO. And they did things like giving people mentions for blogging about them, things like that. And they came to the attention of the world famous Matt Cutts, who delisted them.
You don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they would go to bloggers and say, if you link to our site from your site, then I think we'll tweet about you. It was link trading, basically.
Yeah. It was a growth hack. That's what they call it.
A growth hack.
A growth hack.
God.
So Matt did delist him, and huge drop in. By the way, Rap Genius responded, but a huge drop.
They immediately
went from 700,000 views to 100,000 views in a minute, you know, whatever it was. They wrote an open letter to Google about Rap Genius SEO by the founders, and the TLDR, we effed up. Other lyric sites are almost definitely doing worse stuff, and we'll stop. We'd love.
They really needed to rearrange the order of that sentence.
Yeah.
But okay. Yeah. I can't stand apologies that are not contrite enough. Either apologize and be contrite, or don't.
But you know what they're saying is this is a very competitive environment. This lyric site thing, and
they're all
cheating. So we felt we had to cheat.
Yeah.
It's the Lance Armstrong defense. We'd love for Google to take a closer look at the whole lyric search landscape and see whether it can make changes that would improve lyric search results. So they explained what they did. And actually, Google responded by unblocking them. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to have made a difference. At least according to an article here on Search Engine Watch by Jennifer Slegg, the lyric site fails to recover traffic after the Google penalty. Here's the graph, by the way, so you can see the uniques. Once Google allowed Rap Genius back in the index after they cleaned up the bad backlink profile, which largely involved them nuking their poor quality backlinks, they went from 700,000 uniques a day to 100,000, according to Quantcast, in the delisting. But now they're only 400,000. So they've still lost 50% of their total, and they haven't recovered from it, at least so far. In the end, she writes, Rap Genius only lost their Google rankings for slightly over a week, something that's definitely on the extremely short side of penalty links. So it would appear they were getting special help from Google to resolve the issues. That's why I want to get Matt on to talk about it. Perhaps they're funded by Andreessen Horowitz.
They're going to end up better off as a business because they're going to end up not with cheap, going back to what we said before, mass horrible traffic, cynically raised versus honest to God relationships of value. In the long run, I believe the latter is going to work.
You know, we see the same thing in podcasting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What are the tricks? What are the tricks in podcasting?
Well, yeah, what do you mean, Leo?
What do you mean?
This sounds like a good story.
So I was at New Media Expo on Monday, and I keynoted a panel, which I didn't realize, but we actually broadcast. So it was kind of an industry insider panel. But one of the people on the panel was Norm Pattiz, who was the founder of Westwood One, the big radio syndicator. He's a radio legend. He's in the Hall of Fame and everything. And he started a company called Podcast One. And we were talking backstage, and we were talking about metrics because, of course, any ad-supported media like this, we sell ads. The way we bill our advertisers is we say you had a certain number of impressions. They call it in radio's cost per thousand or CPM. And we charge $70 or $80 per thousand listens, which is very high. Radio charges about $10. But we think we're worth it, and apparently,
what do you charge?
80.
Wow, that's really high. That's good. That's premium, man. That's
oh yeah. Well, we feel like we're a premium product, and advertisers seem to agree. And my position's always been: look, you tie that, but that's tied to the numbers. We have to give you download numbers, and we say, well, you know, in this show, in case of this show, 70,000 people downloaded it, so it's 70,000 times 70. Actually, 70 times 80 is the cost for an ad. But Norm went, oh, yeah, because we use PodTrack as the number generator. He said, oh, yeah, we don't like them. I said, what? He said, they count uniques. I said, oh, well, yeah, they count unique individual downloads. What do you count? So it turns out, and this is true of a lot of people, they count every time that file gets hit.
Yeah, it's page views versus visits in web parlance. Yeah,
they're hits. Web page you know how you parlance, sometimes right. say, that site had a million hits. Well, yeah, because each person who loads that site gives you 30 hits because they're hitting over. Same, it's almost identical in podcasting. Various podcast downloaders and so forth will hit the file many times instead of once. So what we do is we count each unique IP address. Now, that gives you an undercount in some cases. Microsoft, for instance, everybody who listens at Microsoft comes in under the same IP address. We count them once, so it could be 10,000 people listening at Microsoft. We don't know. But we've decided that we want to use the lower conservative provable number, and then that's one of the reasons our CPMs are high, and then bill accordingly.
Good for you.
He charges $10 CPMs but uses this magic number that is very high. And we could use that number. It's usually, you know, five times higher or 10 times higher. But that's how podcasts, you know, a lot of podcasts, when you hear this, you know, we have a million users or a million listeners, that's what the number they're quoting. So that's not at all unusual.
There's also the issue of, like, you have clients like podcatchers that will automatically download a new episode, but it's not necessarily a listen, right? Like, there's no way to tell
no
if someone actually listened to the MP3.
So don't even mention that.
So actually, your undercounts might be sort of washed. Might be a wash,
right,
you know?
Right. And ultimately, the only thing that matters is the advertiser paid X amount of dollars and he got this much value out of it. And if there's, you know, if we're overcharging, they won't come back. And right. If we're undercharging, then we don't get what we think we deserve. So you work hard to do this right. And my position's always been we want a win-win, basically. We're no good if we don't win for our advertiser and vice versa. And the advertiser has to be win for our, so it's our audience. So it's a win-win-win. Everybody has to be good for everybody. How did I get into this? But the point being that every industry has cheating.
Has its tricks.
And what happens with cheating is it makes it much harder for those who don't cheat. And the intense pressure, I guess the analog is sports, is Lance Armstrong, is the performance-enhancing drug era of baseball, is if everybody's using PEDs, there's intense pressure on you to do so as well because you can't compete, right?
Yeah.
So I can understand Rap Genius saying, hey, everybody cheats. We got to cheat too. And sometimes, you know, being the honest guy is not the way to succeed because they could just disappear. Anyway.
Yeah, well, it's true. It's
long, boring explanation. I'm sorry I brought it up.
No. I was like, I wanted to hear the podcasting dirt. but in that case, you know, look, this is why you sit in the big chair, right? I mean, the case of being able to charge a higher price for fewer numbers, that's a quality product. You know, that's proof that your audience is more valuable versus.
Yeah, we're sold out.
Bigger numbers for
many
cheaper.
Of our shows are already sold out for the first quarter, right, Lisa? She's not paying attention.
What are we doing wrong on Twig?
Hey, Lisa, how's Twig's sales for Q1? Looking really good.
Transparency in action. I like it.
We're actually going to do an inside tweet a little later on. We'll fill you in. But no,
I won't believe it until I see that sponsored burrito. Damn it!
Many of our shows are sold out. But sold out, another thing that we do that others don't do, that's three ads for
Yeah, you limit. Yeah.
You limit. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, don't say that out loud. She says it's really six ads. And the reason it's six ads is because the billboards count as an ad.
Yeah.
We even count that. So at the beginning of every show, as you know, we say, you know, brought to you by blah, 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 and you get a little 10
you have
second.
Three interruptions per show. That's what the viewer cares about.
That's what
about,
real people care about. Right.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember, what's his name? My good friend from Rev3, president of Rev3.
Jim Lauterbach.
Thank you, Jim. Back in the days of Dignation, he bragged about, and I'm sure you have the same there, incredibly high unaided recall of sponsors, of who sponsors the show and what their message is.
Yeah, well,
But the relationship of you reading the spot and talking about it and not really interrupting the show, but it's true native advertising in a sense, but it's well-labeled and known. You say it's time to go to a sponsor, and this is what we have. But that has a higher impact than just slapping 87 avails at you, which is another way to game the system.
Yeah. And by the way, I just want you to know, ours are even higher.
I bet they are.
Google.
Jim says theirs were 105%. I don't know how you.
Yeah, perfect. Plus, Google buys Timely. My favorite alarm clock app.
And your favorite alarm clock app is probably not going to get a lot of development done on it for a while, unfortunately.
Was it an Aqua Hire?
Aqua higher.
Damnation. Higher. You know why I like Timely, besides it's beautiful, blah, 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 is that it's synced with all my other devices. So yes. This is really, this is a huge value. Maybe not, maybe people don't have multiple Android devices, but I did. And so when my alarm goes off in my bedroom, it goes off all over the house. The tablets go off, the other phones go off, because they're all...
And Lisa, the dogs.
Everything goes off. I cannot oversleep anymore. That's a good thing for an alarm clock. So I'm, yeah, I mean, it works.
Any app that properly implements cross-device syncing real-time is...
So cool.
...is a good app in my book.
So cool. Yep.
That's a relatively new API. So.
Is it?
Relatively. Like, and it uses
Google...
And
it uses your Google account as the...
Yeah, to store data. Yeah, that's relatively the last couple of years.
Does it store it, like, kind of in your Google Drive? Where does it store that data?
I do think that it's your... I do think it's Drive. I think it's, like, a hidden secret kind of Drive.
Right.
But yes...
What a clever way to do that.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, like the game I really like, Clash of Clans, the same thing. As soon as you log into your Google ID, it says, oh, yeah, okay, and that, and not, it's not, it's kind of like the game, play games or whatever the center game thing is, but I think it's
play
all,
games, yeah.
It's all underneath that, right? It's mm-hmm. all, yeah, same API. By the way, you will be seeing Android in your cars soon. GM, yeah. Honda, and Audi are all going to do Android instead of Microsoft Car or QNX as their telematics system. Big win for Google.
It's kind of a response to the Apple partnerships, right?
In yeah, except I don't think, I think it's different because the Apple, as far as I know, when your car is Apple-fied, it doesn't mean your car has been running iOS all along. It means there's mm-hmm. an interface to the data from iOS and the screen can be put up on the screen. This, if I'm not mistaken, means that Android is the underlying operating system of the car. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but I think that's the deal. It was Microsoft Car. That's looking very dated. That's what Ford uses, and it was starting to get dated. Google created the Open Automotive Alliance, kind of an analog to their Open Handset Alliance, which is what Android is on phones. And I believe the plan is to have Android run the infotainment system or the telematics systems in these cars. That makes sense. It's a free operating system. They've been
paying. And is it open, really?
Yeah, the same way Open Handset Alliance is open. No, it's not open. What? Why? What?
Silly me.
It's a marketing term.
Open.
It's a marketing term.
Open, not in, not like in, as in a door is open. Come on in. Can I make you some tea? BlackBerry owns the other biggie, which is QNX, oddly enough. Maybe some of this flight to Android is fear that what will happen if with BlackBerry and QNX. In 2009, BMW, GM announced, and Intel announced the Geneva Alliance. I'm sorry, Alliance, based on Linux. See, Android is Linux. I think this makes perfect sense. And you're already involved in that and so forth.
I cannot wait for the Chrome car. I will.
I hope it works better than your Chromebook. Is all I can say. How many is it now?
On number 3.
What's wrong? Mine's fine.
Well, I use mine maybe too much.
Oh, yeah,
the first one had a weird sound thing where it would get out of phase. And I talked to the product manager for Pixels today. It was very nice that he called, introduced by somebody. It wasn't. I asked for no special treatment. I got no special treatment. Though I did say I was going to, when I was having problems, I said, I'm going to talk about this stuff on Twig, fellas. So you're warned.
Oh.
That one, they replaced it immediately. That's good. And then the screen on the next one went completely black when I opened it up.
Aye.
And the problem was it happened 2 days before New Year's, which supposedly the order went in immediately. Supposedly it was shipped immediately, but it wasn't. So I was a week without a machine. I was using my old poor Samsung toy, my Tonka Chromebook.
It's Tonka book.
Yeah, Tonka book, right. I like that. And so I just got, in fact, I had thought that someone else was using my I.O. book. So I finally got that one out and saved myself 2 days of that time. And the product manager said that there's a problem with some screens that they knew, and they thought they caught them all, where I didn't know this, that the Chromebook, most laptops have the LCD and then put glass in front of it. Chromebooks and, like, your phones laminate them together into one.
Ah.
so it gives you less depth and
yeah, but you have to replace the whole
stuff.
The whole
but then you got to replace the whole thing.
Yeah.
So, and I think the problem with Chromebook, well, the problem I really had in the end was the fulfillment. It wasn't the ninjas, it was the fulfillment.
You're going to have lots more choice. Lenovo's announced that they're going to get heavy into Chromebooks this year and in a variety of price points and configurations, which I think is something that's been missing. You've had the very low end, you've had the Pixel. It'd be great to have a mid-range
exactly.
Chromebook with
well,
touch.
The Asus, in fact, I was almost getting ready to buy it. They're so cheap, I was getting ready to buy one for the use of the week. I was so desperate
wow.
to buy one.
They are so but cheap. Yeah.
The Asus C720P is their touchscreen version at $300. The non-touchscreen is $200. And it's people rave about it, and it's a good machine. It's solid. It's Haswell. It's only 2 gigs. But people seem to rave about it. And I think you are going to get that mid $300-$400 having a lot of the features. Now, when the guy at Google, Kevin, today said, well, when we have people have a bad experience, we offer them something. We offer them a Play certificate or we offer them this. I said, no, I don't want anything. I don't want to have any treatment here. Even though you say it's not special treatment, I said, don't give me anything. And I said, you know what you can do for me, Kevin? You can wink at me when I tell you how much I want to have a new version of a Chromebook with Haswell in it.
And
he wouldn't play but my game.
Do you find that you touch the screen a lot,
yes.
Jeff?
Oh, Gina,
really?
That's a really interesting thing. Yeah, because here's what happened. I didn't realize how much I do it. Because when I was off of it, I was not just reaching for it, but I was getting carpal tunnel. Because what I do it for is when I'm in Twitter or things like that, or stories, I end up mainly to scroll, not to point so much, but to scroll. And it relieves the hand pressure you get.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I'm turning around a little bit on the Chromebook. My wife handed in her laptop, which was her work laptop, when we left San Diego. And so I gave her the Pixel and said, good luck. And she loves it.
You're on your own, honey. Wow.
She loves it. We hang out. We hang out on it all the time. She's at her mother's right now, so I see the baby, and she's job searching on it and doing cover letters and resume, the whole thing, and Drive. And like she's somewhat paranoid about Google. She doesn't like the idea of Google having all of her stuff. She uses Yahoo Mail as like a matter of principle. Not all of her eggs in one basket. So she's sort of sufficiently skeptical. Which is why I love her. She's been loving the Pixel. And it's funny, we moved and we had to ship some stuff, and she wound up like throwing the Pixel into like a priority mailbox and shipping it across the country. And I said to her, hey, did you insure that box? And she's like, no, it's a Chromebook. It's only like $200, right? I was like, that was the Pixel, which is a $1,500 computer. She was like, whoa, but it arrived safely and all was fine. But it looks like the Chromebook sold really well over the holiday season, very too. Well. First and third best-selling laptop on Amazon.
Yeah, but I don't know what that means. And there was
feel like, yeah, is Amazon a good indicator? I don't know.
It's price. It's all about price.
I think it's growing constituencies, right? One is schools, education. They're making huge inroads. I see schools that install 1,800, 2,000 Chromebooks.
I feel like it is the right choice for a school for education.
I think some companies are starting to realize this is a lot cheaper way. It's a good thing for a salesperson. They're talking to the cloud. They're talking to Salesforce or whatever. And so I think we're seeing some companies starting to go in. And then I think that it's starting to become a grandmother machine.
It's a perfect grandma machine.
I hate to imagine. I was going to think about it for my father, and I thought, no, just to try to explain the notion of the cloud to him would be more than life.
Where's my stuff? No. Thanks for this $200 laptop. So when you gave it to your wife, you didn't say... Yeah. It's $1,500. You gotta get the points.
I did. I said to her, look, this is a really nice machine. I showed her the little thing with the rainbow lights. I was like, how cool this is,
she appreciated it's that. Our machine.
It's our machine.
So this shows you how out of touch she is. She didn't look at the unibody aluminum construction, the 4:3 aspect ratio, the touch screen, and say, this must be a premium laptop.
She did not.
She's like, it's the $200 one.
If I had handed her a Tonka book, she would have said, this is a piece of crap. I handed her the Pixel, and she's like, okay, let's try this.
It's okay. Yeah, it's all right. I'll just throw it in a box, mail it back east.
Yeah, right. She didn't even carry it with her on the plane. She was like, I got too much baby stuff. I'll just ship it.
Yeah, no, I understand.
I'm like, okay. She's but now she loves it.
_ normal person.
Normal
person. This is how normal people are.
Yeah, but she took to it really, really well. I was surprised. I'm waiting for her to say, like, how do I start up office? But I think that she's gotten out of that, you know, because she worked at a big university and they were all Microsoft. It was Exchange and Office and the whole thing. And she hasn't gotten there. She
Very
grabbed her documents and yeah.
That's
yeah.
actually really good.
I'm trying to convince my new dean to listen to the tech guy and switch to docs.
I think it's a great way to go for education.
It is.
Let's do the change log, and then we can wrap things up. What do you say?
We've missed it.
You know, we didn't do it without you. It's just not the same.
I heard that one episode. You said, well, if Gina was here, this would be in the change log. And I went,
oh, but she's not. Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome back the trumpets, because it's time once again for the Google. We'll let
the
him
Google
say
Google change log.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, all new for 2014.
Well, I decided not to include everything that's happened all through December.
Thank
while
you.
We missed.
That was a lot, yeah.
And there actually wasn't really a whole lot in the past 2 weeks. My magic mouse, I'm sliding all over the rundown here. But we got one new thing and a couple of shutdowns. First, Google launched a new G+ auto backup utility for your desktop. So on your mobile phones, on iOS and on Android, the Google+ app has this auto backup where it automatically stores your photos up to Google+. You can now do that from your desktop. If you download the latest version of Picasa for Windows or Mac, there's a separate app in there called Google+ Auto Backup. It's got the same icon that you see in Google+. It's a separate app from Picasa. And you tell it what folders to look at on your desktop, if you've got a SIM card, any sort of drive that's attached to your computer. And it does exactly what the Auto Backup mobile app does. Neat. It uploads all your photos, and then you get all the auto awesome goodness along with that. So pretty cool. I have to say, I really love the auto awesome stuff, especially around videos. I'm taking a lot more videos of my daughter, and it takes all, you know, you don't have to edit it all, and it actually comes out, the video comes out pretty nice.
Have both of you received your 2013 auto awesome film?
Yes. It was surprisingly good.
It's so amazing.
It led with the photo of us at Google I.O., which made me really happy.
That was in mine as well. It didn't lead with it. It's so cool.
Yeah, I think cool. Responses on. I think that they ranked the photos by, you know, how people liked it. It must have been that because I think that photo went around. Most of my photos are private, so there's not a lot a signal there to measure. But it was pretty good. It was pretty good. It was a nice. Although the snow falling thing drove me nuts. I love the 2013 wrap up.
Yeah, too many people put snow on too many things.
Yeah, and I heard you guys say on the show that Google+ was doing it if you shook your camera, shook your phone after you took the picture. I was completely unaware of that, but a bunch of my photos had snow on them.
It doesn't do it. You have to do it.
I was like, that's why that happened. I'm like, clearly I can't hold my hand still because a bunch of my photos had. a couple of shutdowns along with that. That's the only new thing. No more location history dashboard. I knew this was going to make you sad, Leo, because I know you'd love this.
Yes.
So in Google Latitude, where you check in or track your location, there was a dashboard that would let you visualize. And I think we've even looked at yours, Leo, how much time you spend at work, how much time you spend at home. Google's killing the dashboard. Google is not erasing the data. They say you can continue to view and manage your location history information. You go to maps.google.com/location history, but we've removed the location history dashboard, the part of the location history website with the summary of your locations and miles traveled and trip information. They're not deleting any raw data. They're just rethinking the dashboard. So,
yeah, what they're rethinking is, gee, we really shouldn't let people know how much we know about their location, because it's not like they're not getting rid of the data.
Yeah.
So the point of the dashboard is to let people know how much they know about my location and then let me use the data that you already have. If they said, oh, we decided not to keep that data anymore, then I could see it. But I think the dashboards are critical to letting users know what Google knows. And I think
that's a good point.
It's bad PR for them. That's why they got rid of it.
Okay. So you think people looked at that dashboard and got freaked?
Yes.
Because people got freaked?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a valid theory. I'm kind of anti-dashboards at this point. I came to this place with ThinkUp where we built this dashboard. I think a dashboard, you look at a dashboard, you like look cool charts, and it gives you kind of a shot into light, like initially. But unless you're really obsessed with the data set, you never go back and look at it again. And I think that dashboards kind of rely on you to interpret the information. Although I know Google did some cool stuff like, oh, you traveled this many times around the moon or whatever in the past 3 years, which, you know, kind of translates the data into something. I just think there's a better way than dashboards to show, and this is what we're working on with ThinkUp, to give you kind of insights into that data. But you might be right, Leo. It might be a PR. But this makes me worried, though. Like, they have the raw data, and now they're just taking away my view into it.
Yeah. Isn't that the point of dashboard? If you go to google.com/dashboard, the point of it is to show what Google, is to show what Google knows about you.
Right.
And
so I don't want to see them moving away from that. I want to see them moving toward being more transparent about what they know and what they're compiling.
Yeah. I mean, this is all the stuff Google knows about me, but now when I go to location... What this used to give me at least something valuable. Mm-hmm. Is it over already, or is it still? No, it's still here, so I can at least still show you what you got. This is amazing stuff. I can go back to a date and watch me move around Petaluma for that day. You know, the places I went. I wonder if I go back to Europe. Boy, wouldn't that be cool?
Ooh. Yeah.
Let's go to Turkey. I was in Turkey.
And you know that they still have this data internally. When they take away the user-facing dashboard, they still have this dashboard. Yeah.
That's kind of my point.
It's a bummer.
If you're going to have this, you better darn well show it to me. And yeah, if it crosses the creepy line, guess what? It crosses the creepy line, right?
Right.
And
the optimistic part of me thinks that they probably saw that not a lot of users were looking at the dashboard very much. And they don't want to maintain a user-facing product that isn't getting the use, and that they're going to offer something better. That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that it's not this is bad PR for us, so let's just pull it down.
Well, I hope you're right.
But yeah. Also, another fatality, I guess that's a little more of an extreme way to put it. Schemer. I don't know if you remember Schemer.
I was my tool for a twig many moons ago.
Yeah, it was. It was. So this is reported by, this is Google Operating System says that an internal version of the Schemer site says that it's going to be shut down. So there has been no announcement, and there's no link to that internal site. I'm not really sure what that means. I think this was a tipster inside. But apparently this internal site says Schemer is being shut down soon. Sign in to get your data before it's gone. So they'll probably have some sort of takeout. It just sounds like Schemer didn't really get the use that Google requires, which doesn't surprise me. You don't hear a lot of people talking about this app.
No, so, I stopped using it. It was actually kind of annoying.
Yeah. So that's all I got for the changelog. One new thing and...
plays its roms, changelog person. Actually, this is kind of cool. This is my Google location map when I went to Europe. But the only thing that's bad about it is that the phone kept thinking it was back in Italy. So if you follow... I keep going back to Italy, see?
The phone was like, mozzarella.
And then briefly for a moment, I went to Bordeaux. Huh?
Are you using Italian SIM or something?
No, I think it was the ship's internet or something was thinking. So if it was just the phone GPS, it would have been fine. But I think it was the ship's internet that was getting it confused. And then for some reason, I went to France briefly. I don't know.
Hope you had a good time.
But still, this is neat. Even if nobody ever looks at it, I think this is, there's some value to this somehow. Oh, well. I guess download your location history. Can you get it exported to KML and look at it and other stuff? They don't have to do a fancy dashboard for me.
I think that it's just a straight takeout. If there's takeout for
maybe
location
takeout
data,
still, huh?
Yeah, I don't think there's any way to save the dashboard itself.
See that key button here? Delete history from this day. Delete all history. That's got to be there. That's important.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah, I don't want my wife to know where I was this day. Google knows. That's I just. Oh well. Thank you, Gina, for the change log. Good to have you back.
Great to be back.
You want to see my 2013 movie?
Yeah, let's see it.
You guys feature prominently in it.
Aw.
Perfect beginning.
Yeah. This shouldn't be in there. That's random. This should be. These are all shows and things we did. People I love. People I hate. No, people I love. That's sideways. I don't know why. Random sideways video of Metallica singing the Star Spangled. Who's that? Who are they? It does somehow know. So you think that it's doing this... See, it got my son's graduation from high school. That's awesome. I mean, it got Jason going. Colleen.
Aww.
This is really special to me. This, in many ways, was 2013.
That's a good year right there.
Yeah. And Chad. People think for some reason that Chad's my son because he keeps showing up in the... 2013 video as a cat. Aww. In Greece, a Greek cat, Topkapi Palace. There's Jamal and Zandra. That's great fun. And there you are, Chad, wrapping it up.
Yeah, I like how it ends with that. It's like Chad, this is how you do stuff on your phone.
Look, it's a computer. It ain't perfect, but that
that's getting best supporting.
That's
actor
a good year right there. That's a good
that's
video.
That's a hell of a good year, and I would never do that myself. Although, it kind of inspired me to think maybe I could do something better if I, you know, choose my own things.
Oh, I love editing video, but I've accepted that.
It's so much work.
It just takes, it's 8 hours to every 30 minutes? I don't know how your staff does it so well. It's just a lot of time. A lot of time.
Yeah. How many staff editors do we have? 5? That's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of people in here.
I mean, just thinking about the best of 2013 videos.
There's stuff behind the scenes that you don't ever see. And you shouldn't, because it's...
Are they Google bots?
You never want to see how we do this. Our show today brought to you by Personal Capital. I'll tell you how we pay for it from our great sponsors like Personal Capital. Ed Harris, the founder of Personal Capital, was in studio a year ago, and he told me about it. He was just starting the company up, and I said, this is a great idea. I signed up then. I've been using it ever since. It gives you a dashboard. It tells you. See, here's what happens in life. Your financial life gets more and more complicated as time goes by. You get out of college, you got maybe a credit card, an old house, you rent an apartment. Soon you got a checking account, a savings account. Pretty soon, one hopes, you're putting money into retirement. You've got many credit cards. The average, I just saw the average, like 8 per person. Investments, you've got mortgages, you've got loans. Your life got complicated. But how do you know if you're doing the right thing with your money, if you're investing it well? With Personal Capital, you put all that stuff in there. It automatically keeps it up to date. You get a dashboard that lets you know how everything's going. And then you can say, I can invest this much. I'd like to invest this much. It's wealth management for the digital age. And you know how you get wealthy? You manage your money from day one, and you do it right for free. Now, see, you got to love that. PersonalCapital.com/twig. It just takes a minute to sign up. It will pay big dividends. And by the way, they will help you with your investments. And it's never too early to start putting some money away for the future. PersonalCapital.com/twig. Get your first free Personal Capital account. Smart investing means seeing the big picture. So start today. PersonalCapital.com/twig. And we thank them so much for supporting us on This Week in Google. Now time to wrap things up, starting with something we've missed for so long, Gina's tip of the week.
Well, I have to thank Abraham Williams, who just chatted me to tell me about to tell me about JourneyToTheMoon.appspot.com. So we were just wondering if you could map your latitude takeout data, and you can. One of the Google Plus developer experts built this, so you can export your latitude data, and then you drag and drop the JSON archive right onto this page, and it will generate a map for you. So, hey, I like this a lot. I don't care if it's a third party app or if Google's doing it for you.
That's a good point. Maybe that's why they did this. It's like, hey, anybody could do you the dashboard.
Yeah, exactly. Anybody can make the dashboard, and I really like the idea that your archive, their takeout archive, is doing something versus just kind of, you know, laying on your hard drive somewhere, not doing anything. So thanks a lot to Abraham for that. I like that. Journey to the Moon. It's Journey to the Moon with dashes. Journey dash to dash the moon.
To the moon, Alice.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah, very good. Jeff Jarvis, can we get a number a week from
you? We are going to get more than one. We got Kickstarter. Rounded up its numbers for the year.
Oh.
And had it put on a nice little presentation. And their 3 million people pledged $480 million to projects in 2013.
Wow.
19,911 successfully funded from 214 countries. People pledged from 214 countries. 800,000 backed more than one project. 80,000 backed more than 10. And then at the end of the presentation, they list some of their little stars. Now, it's interesting. Kickstarter tries to avoid being seen as the gadget place, but look at the things they highlight. Pebble.
Yeah.
Which, by God, is a company now with a new product announced. Oculus Rift.
Yeah, same thing. New products at CES.
Ooh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Goldie Box.
That is so cool.
It is.
An emoji translation of Moby Dick. Well,
wow.
Not everything.
I feel like my English professor just passed out.
I don't even.
That's amazing.
Why?
Why?
Yeah, why? A DeLorean-powered hovercraft. That was very cool.
That's awesome.
I guess they're pointing out that not everything is important, but some is. And, you know, wow, that's amazing. What?
Wow, Kickstarter does such great communications work. Look at that.
A human-powered helicopter.
My gosh. I never saw this one.
I didn't either.
Wow. There you go. Very cool.
Nice. Students built classrooms with containers. Grandma Pearl made happy canes.
Yay, Grandma Pearl! Escape park opened in Philly. That's awesome. Nice. Photo exhibit on the Berlin Wall. This is pretty impressive, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Kickstarter was on Jeopardy. Let's hear this. I will use the energy of Niagara Falls to carry power to Buffalo by 1896. Come on, my coil worked. Trust me. If early inventors used Kickstarter, who is Nikolai Tesla? That is awesome.
Very cool.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Nicholas. Kickstarter was in Cards Against Humanity. All right. Blue Ruin won at Cannes. That was a Kickstarter movie, I guess, huh? Wow. Innocente. Wow. So anyway, a long list of things. But you're right. It did focus a little bit on the gadgets. It's interesting because now there's a huge, wide range of crowdsourced funding.
Platforms.
I mean, it seems like they've just, I don't know if even Kickstarter was the first.
But well, I would argue the Spot.us, started by David Cohn, who's now at Circa, was a very early venture in this, was trying to do crowdfunded journalism projects.
Yeah. So there you go.
Kickstarter wasn't the first. There were micropayments and there were others, but Kickstarter just hit the right note.
Yes.
Oh, boy, did they.
Hit the right note.
And
that's more important than the technology.
I'm in that group of 80,000 that has contributed more to the 10 Kickstarters.
How many of them did you get?
I keep falling.
I think it's a good idea on Yahoo Tech that they have Kickstarter reviews.
That's a nice
idea. Reviews of products that are shipped from Kickstarter?
No, they're getting the prototypes.
Oh, getting the prototypes. So during the campaign?
Yes.
Oh, also that's afterwards, interesting.
Because they did. I have mine right here.
The razor that... Oh, look. How many miles have you traveled, Chad?
So I just started importing it. I didn't know it was going to do this really cool animation, so...
I love the little rocket. Yeah, that's great.
Get to the moon.
I don't have that far left to go. But it says, you know, which city is I've spent the most time in. And apparently I went to a few... Emeryville for 2 hours some point.
That's neat. Well, I'm downloading mine too now, and I'll do mine.
Didn't get very far, unfortunately. Just a little bit.
To the moon! Do you upload the zip, or do you have to unzip it first?
You have to unzip it. And get the JSON file.
I need the JSON file.
JSON.
What's that thing, Jeff?
I was trying to plug it in. I have my 3Doodler.
Oh, there's a successful Kickstarter. They're at CES also.
Yes, they are.
So, what do you think? Are you have you built the Eiffel Tower?
I got the plastic. I got the ABS plastic as opposed to the PLA.
Yeah.
And the ABS is more for doing things in the air, whereas I think the PLA is more about sketching in 2D and then making things out of it, which I think would be more fun, actually. And writing somebody's name and that kind of stuff. So it's fun. I mean, it's people still make fun of me for a reason. But they have many other causes to do so. I still think it's a very neat device.
And I think you should carry it in your pocket and take it to Davos.
Yes,
and exactly. Build a guitar for Bono.
Well, here's a problem. So I just got the return package to upgrade my glass.
Oh, nice. Oh. I just sent that in. Nice. Oh.
But I don't know. I might want I don't know where the heck the charger is. It's a UPS. It's a USB charger. I don't
Chad,
know.
Chad, I made it to the moon. I made it to the moon. I made it to the moon.
What?
I made it to the moon. I made it to the moon.
What?
Nice.
I made it to the moon several times over.
Wow.
It looks like I traveled.
But are you going to get back? That's the question.
Apparently, you only go once. You only live once. And these are all the places I've been.
Spent a lot of time in Australia. Yeah, I feel like mine doesn't. It only has like a full 5,000 hours, basically.
These are all the cities.
You have a ton more hours.
Well, I've been using Google Location for a long time.
Yeah.
This is really, I mean, if this goes to Australia, it goes back, this is a couple of years worth of data. That's awesome. I don't even remember going to Edgewater, United States, but according to Google, I was there once.
CNBC.
Look at this. Is that where CNBC is? Mm-hmm. Maybe I was.
Or you just go across the George Washington Bridge. Or didn't you ride a bike across it or some such ridiculous?
Maybe I did something like that. This is very nicely done. But now I think this is. It says I've traveled 1,448,851 kilometers. That's pretty good. I've traveled to the moon and back almost five times. So my tool. My friends, my tool has nothing to do with Google. It's just a little thing I like to call a Mac Pro.
It looks like it's just a big beer glass.
Yeah. I'm taking this to Oktoberfest next time I go to Germany.
This is when you should show what Pogue did with it, Leo.
What did Pogue do with it? I haven't seen his review yet.
You had the video up.
Oh.
You cute it.
Oh. Chad, you going to play it for us?
No, I don't know.
Oh, I'll get it. I'll have to go to yahoo.com/tech. You think I keep tabs open? I don't. I know you guys all do. You have hundreds of tabs open, but I believe in tab purity. Let's go to Yahoo Tech. Apple's new Mac Pro. I have to say, just a snide remark, I don't like the... What happens? So you go to the website and you down and you click on something and you get these articles. But this is very fussy little Times Roman, tiny in here. I don't like how this.
Same with the New York Times redesigned today, put out today.
Is that maybe it's the new thing?
There's font problems online.
Maybe that's it. The rendering isn't very good. All right. Let's see what Yahoo. David Pogue, the Jerry Lewis of technology reporters.
And welcome to What Is That Thing? The show where we ask you, what is that thing?
How do I go full screen?
Is this? What is that thing?
What is that thing?
A. B. C. Or D. The answer is E. None of the above. It's the new Apple Mac Pro. Available now, starting at the high price of $3,000 and going up to $9,500. This computer is crazy fast. Look at this. In Final Cut Pro, it can munch this 4K video like butter. That's four times the resolution of high-def TV. And it's made in the USA. It's portable, one-handable. Expanding the memory is super easy. The shell pops right off.
Oh, the music's going to make me shoot myself.
The jacks light up when you move it.
It's like Benny Hill.
It's super quiet.
And no one who's watching this is going to buy it.
But it's not like the old Mac.
Oh, that's all right. They still have to
put drives and cards inside.
I don't know. I mean, I'm glad it looks like this. This is good. If there's a market for this, all the better. It's not our market.
USB jack. Not your market at all.
Thank goodness.
Gorgeous object of art.
I'd be.
Might wind up surrounded by mismatched clutter and gadgets. Pros, Piffle. Real pros work in film editing and music recording.
You're going to drop it. You're going to drop it, man. Then we're going to see you crying. I love how he had to unplug.
And this is why I'll never be David Pogue. I just don't have the damn energy. That guy.
He had a lot of jump cuts working for him there, Leo.
How does he do it? And he's still, by the way, playing with it.
Creative and scientific types
on this video.
Time is money.
He was, this is good. He's showing what other people are doing with it.
Or this. It is a computer for professional, creative, and scientific types for whom time is
oxygen. Now I know why Meatloaf used to keep oxygen backstage after every show. That thing weighs 80 pounds. I think people don't understand. We are done, ladies and gentlemen, with this edition of Mac Break Weekly. I thank you so much, Gina Trapani, for returning to us. Is this your office in Brooklyn?
No, this is the ThinkUp office, actually.
Oh, I like the little maps.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's actually, it's Potluck's conference room. We share office space with
Can I come visit?
What's that?
Can I come visit?
You'll have to go over a bridge, Jeff.
Please do. Please do. No, yeah. We're on 23rd and 3rd. Come on by.
No.
You don't have to go over a bridge.
Oh, I don't know. The east side. I don't do the east side.
I never really did the east side either. This was
Wait a minute. What do you have to do to get to the east side? Go across Central Park.
Earn about $2 million more.
Oh. Well,
it's the bus to the city bike to the subway to the taxi to the ferry to, yeah.
I'm just proud to say I was born on the Upper West Side, Morningside Heights. So I'm not one of them hoity-toities either. It's on the east side? What is it, Neil Dash, made of money?
It is near where he lives,
It should be in Soho.
You got to be made of money to be in Soho as well.
Yeah, nowadays.
Yeah, Foursquare, Gawker, there's
this hip startup area, right?
Yes.
All right, Alphabet City, how about that?
We're working on it. I live in Brooklyn, so we're going to try and find some place that's a little more in between us.
Battery Park.
Yeah, okay. Also, made of money.
What's your subway line of choice from home?
The F. So yeah. I now take the 6 to the F. Or the F to the 6.
Great. We're talking like New Yorkers.
Yeah. Yeah. You got is that the IRT or the MTA?
The F is the BMT.
BMT.
The F and the 6 connect at Bleecker. That made me so happy. That's relatively new since when I lived here last. So.
Is there a good book on the history of the New York City subways? I would love to read that.
There's got to be many.
The reason there's these different lines is they used to all be privately operated, right?
Yes.
The IRT and BMT were different companies. Huh. I'd love
to type in on Google. I type in history of New York City subways.
Yeah.
And it automatically puts in this better history.
Huh?
What the hell is that?
Huh.
It's giving me my history from my own clicks and links. I can't just type in history of.
Oh, you could go to the Transit Museum.
Yeah, the Transit Museum is great.
And go learn all about the subway there from a transit worker. The 5,000 square mile region served by the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, the MTA, since 1968. Wow. Horsepower, cable cars, trolleys, motor buses, elevated
trains. Rafat Ali's Skift today reports that they're going to get rid of the MetroCard. It's going to go to where tokens have gone to die, and they're going to go with NFC. It's going to take a few years to get there, but that's the intention.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, the best part of the show, after the show. And I haven't even ended the show. Thank you, Gina, for being here. Thank you, Jeff Jarvis, too. Both of you braving cold.
Great to be back.
The wind, yeah, the snow.
Oh, I forgot. Fashion show.
Look at this.
Oh, is this the Uniqlo?
Oh, no, oh, no, no. This is the new Twit t-shirt.
Twit shirt.
Designed by Anthony Nielsen, one of our crack editors. Wow. That's one for Jake, cute. That's gorgeous.
That's a good shirt right there.
And I'm gorgeous in it, eh?
You look good in it. It complements your lovely complexion.
It's not, yeah, what goes well with pink?
Well, I have the lovely overhead fluorescent lighting going on now, so not quite as good as
we
as,
should send both of you Twit bobbleheads that you so you can throw them away later. And thank you for being here, both of you. Thank you all for joining us this week in Google. Wednesdays, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time, 2100 UTC. He's got the fez. Man, you look like some crazy Turk.
I don't look like some crazy homeless guy.
I don't know what to make of that.
I'm gonna get it straight.
I am proud to call both of you my friends. Thank you for being here. Thank you, my friends, for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google and everything else that we want to talk about.